This is Flag Fly Forever with Mike Gianella, John Hegland, Samuel Hale, and the Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Team.
Welcome to episode 286 of Flags Fly Forever, a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm Mike Gianella, and once again with me are John Hegland and Samuel Hale. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, but I think the question, Mike, is how are you doing and why are you on the side of a freeway?
Yeah, so for people who don't follow me on Twitter, I haven't talked about this a lot, but we had a water leak in my house. Took a while to diagnose. We had two plumbers come out. They couldn't quite figure it out. One thought it was water coming from the dishwasher. One thought it was just the faucet leaking. A valve broke. And when they finally found it and shut off the valve, unfortunately, a lot of water seeped through. Most of it was in the wall, so it's not like the downstairs got completely flooded. But there's a lot of damage that rip up some walls. And right now you're hearing the sound of one of 19 fans that are going in my house on the upper and lower.
Wait, 19?
19. Most of them are little. There's only like two or three big ones. The freeway sound is one of the bigger ones. If you want to hear something funny, the guy came earlier today to talk about something else, and he told me these are the quiet fans. So if these are the loud fans, I don't think we'd be recording tonight.
Good Lord.
Can I just say one thing? Home ownership is a scam.
Yes.
It really is, although the other thing I'll
renting
say
is a scam too.
But it is, but the other thing I'll say is thank goodness for insurance.
Capitalism is a scam.
It is, but if insurance didn't exist, I obviously would be in tears right now and not talking to any of you.
Yeah, we wouldn't be talking shortstops. You'd be talking to a bank or God forbid worse.
Or a relative about moving in with them.
Or a loan shark, or maybe with all the water, an actual shark.
Hey-o!
Levity!
Yeah. All right, so enough of the banter. I've been told by many that, the banter is not your friend, but that's just an explanation for why it sounds way it sounds. We do apologize. The fans will be out of here tomorrow, I'm told, so next week's episode, even if my house still looks like a wreck, will be a normal sounding episode.
But we'll always be your fans, Mike.
Oh, good God.
I'd say leave the puns to me, but let's not leave the puns to anybody.
I'm just gonna leave.
Or just leave, yeah. So we're at episode 286. We're talking about shortstops. And John, I'm going to throw it to you. I mean, what's the big picture thing here for you at shortstop that you want to talk about before we get into the players and dive into the position?
It's deep. That's my big picture. I guess like from a draft strategy perspective, even if you get a shortstop early and there are, five going in the top 50 right now, that should not dissuade you from taking another one, even, close to the first one you've taken, because, it might be the best player on your board. You have a middle infield spot, and especially in that second tier, the shortstop you take there is a shortstop off the board that one of your competitors can't get. Trying to get your first one in the top 100 is a pretty good idea, but don't be afraid to be flexible if another one comes up that is a value where you're drafting him.
Yeah, I mean, the other side of this and the thing I notice is that I don't want to say it falls off quickly, and some of it depends on, your league. If you're in a standard mixed league or shallow mixed league, you can ignore this. But if you're a deep mixed league like NFBC or TGFBI, which, John and I are currently drafting now, there is a drop. Like, there is a point where you have to kind of watch the board. Something I've advocated and like the idea of is doubling up. Drowning the pool, some people call it. So someone in my TGFBI, for example, just took Dansby Swanson and Wander Franco back-to-back in the sixth and seventh rounds. I kind of like that because it forces some other teams to look at the position. If they don't have one yet, puts a little pressure on them. It really just takes two or three people to do that. And then suddenly you're in that position where you might have to look at somebody further down, like Javi Baez, and go, do I really want to, you know, stretch on him, or do I just kind of wait?
Yeah, that's a good point. And I also agree with you that there is a fall off, and it's not so much that the players going later are undraftable. You know, they're on a par, I think, with the similarly priced second baseman. It's just that the top 100 is so strong. I think it's fair to say it's the strongest position, right? The strongest hitting position in the top 100.
I would say so. And, you know, it used to be like outfield was on a par, but yeah, I think shortstop in the top 100 has become the best for sure.
Yeah. So should we get right into, I mean, it's interesting. You mentioned TGFBI, and both of us took a shortstop with our second round pick. So
yeah.
I mean, we could just start wherever in the five-star tier.
Don't forget, John, before we do that, we have to read a quick note from our friends at Fantrax. Never forget Fantrax.
Never forget. Sorry.
They are don't be sorry. Be happy with Fantrax. They are the most customizable fantasy platform in the industry. They offer the greatest experience for your dynasty, keeper, redraft, and best ball leagues. If you're coming from another stat service, Fantrax makes it super easy. Fantrax can import any of your current leagues and customize them if needed. They also offer the most in-depth player pool in the industry. So if you're one of those dynasty players who goes down to the local college and, you know, wants to see who's out there, Fantrax has you covered there as well. They also have a great draft room. I've used it for Tout Wars. I'll be using it next week and really look forward to it. I've used it for other industry leagues. It's a great site. Do you need a customizable commissioner service? Fantrax offers more unique tools than anyone in the business. And now Fantrax is BP's official fantasy partner. You can sign up at Fantrax.com/BP for a chance to win an official signed Vladimir Guerrero Jr. jersey, my first round pick in TGFBI. What do you know?
Hey.
Go to Fantrax.com and sign up today. That's Fantrax.com, the home of fantasy sports. Okay, so we can make that segue at shortstop. And, you know, if you go to the top of the position, you know, if you're looking at the first two rounds, I think this is the point you were making, John. Even if you don't include, you know, and we'll include him this week, you know, if you say Bobby Witt Jr. is the third baseman, there's four shortstops here going in the first two rounds. And there's one, I think we'll lump him in here just because he's so close, and Francisco Lindor, who's right on the cusp. And you could make an argument for as a second round pick.
Yeah. So I don't know if we have Trey Turner, or Trey Turner is clearly going as the top shortstop overall. Any Trey Turner discourse that needs to happen? What do you think?
I mean, not really. Like shortstops tend to, not shortstop, players over 30 tend to start running like a little bit less, but he's just past that. So I think we're a year or two away from really having that discussion. The only discourse here is if you think he's the fourth best player overall instead of the second, okay. I to me, like the top five overall, or I know we've talked about this, they're all pretty similar. If you think Aaron Judge is a 1-1 because he can come close to next year, fine. Yeah, there's not much discourse. You have to really stretch here. Do you agree? Do you have anything else to add to that?
I mean, one thing I noticed is that the projections tend to have Turner a little lower than the other kind of top five players. And I think the projections might be a little low on the power, because I do think moving to Philadelphia, and if he does hit, I don't know, where Roster Resource has him hitting. They have him leading off. So, mm-hmm. So there is a little bit of a, downside with RBI, but that also gives him more upside with steals. Yeah, no, I would consider him at one overall in an average league in a 5x5 format. He'd be up there with, you know, Acuna, Judge, and Jose Ramirez for me.
Yeah, it's just not really interesting. Now, the other side of that, probably the most interesting polarizing player is Bobby Witt Jr. Although what's really funny about that is I feel like within the industry, we all feel the same way. We feel like he's more of a second round pick maybe than a first rounder, like really good, but kind of a head scratcher as far as why he's going this high. And he's dropped a little bit. Like in the early drafts, he was going about seventh overall. And now he's dropped to ninth.
Yeah, I see a lot of statistical similarity for 2023 with players that are going like in the third and fourth round, like Randy Arozarena and Jazz Chisholm. And, you know, Witt might have a higher ceiling with steals. And of course he's a young player with all the tools, but I think with Witt, it's kind of a case of confusing long-term value with this year's value. And, you know, as Scott Pianowski put it, I posted a tweet about Witt and he replied and, you know, said, yeah, it's shiny new toy, that phenomenon with Witt. I was glad that he was drafted in TGFBI before my pick at 14. So I didn't have to make that decision. I do think I would have passed on him at 14, but I expect that, you know, given the trends, we'll see him moving closer to the turn as we get near opening day.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing about him is, you know, so another analyst was kind of saying, and I think it was a little tongue in cheek. It was what's the difference between Witt and Julio Rodriguez? They're both risky. It's like, well, Rodriguez's projections all put him out well, like extremely above average as a player. Mm-hmm. Whereas Witt's projections with improvement put him slightly above average, you know, in terms of he's going to be a little bit better than the average hitter. Yes, the steals propel him and drive the value, but there's certainly some downside. Like there's some, like if Bobby Witt Jr. finished, you know, I don't know, 75th overall, I don't think anybody would really be surprised by that. They'd probably look and go, yeah, you know, it happens to players like that sometimes. So I think I'm out, but I'm out more because I'd rather have him in the second round and he's just not going to go there.
Yeah. I think you have a pretty big batting average risk there with as little as he walks. And I mean, you're looking at a guy who had a sub 300 OBP last year, and I expect him to do better this year, but that's where I see the downside. And the other downside is, for power, you know, he's in one of the worst parks for that. So, yeah, I mean, I agree. I if he ever fell to the second, I would take a long look, but it's not really something we have to deal with right now.
Yeah, and I'm really a lot of the players here. You know, it's funny because I got Tatis in my TGFBI like at 21st. I really didn't think he'd fall there. That's kind of my position with Tatis. I think some people, particularly, you know, you made this point about Witt, as we get closer to draft day, Tatis goes the other way. Like if he's healthy, if he looks good in spring training, yes, he's going to miss some time. I think April 20th is the date that he comes back from the suspension. So you're going to miss a few games with Tatis, but he's so talented that even if the shoulder causes him some minor issues coming off surgery, or if he's not quite the uber elite player he was, he could easily return first round value given the talent.
I mean, there's so many ways that he can get you value with the power, with the speed. The average should be fine. I guess obviously the questions are the health, not whether he will play, but, you know, as you said, how much the shoulder will affect his swing and his contact. I'm a little worried about the steals, but I think you pointed out that I saw somewhere that he stole a base in a spring training game today, yeah. Yesterday,
that,
today,
that
right?
That was today, I believe, although, you know, things are blurry for me given what's going on. So, but I think it was today. Yeah, today being Wednesday, by the way, by the time this goes out, it will be in the past. And then you've got Bichette here, and it's weird because Bichette had a down year. Yeah, this is kind of what he did. Even in a down year in average leagues, he returned like late first round value. So I think with Bichette, what you're getting is just a broad range of skills, even if the steals don't completely come back.
I do expect some uptick in the steals. So I would take the over on his projections, which are all between 16 to 18. Yeah, there's no real weaknesses. He, as you pointed out, he had a bad year, and yet he still ended up hitting 290 and, you know, getting back end first round value. I mean, I took him in the second round here at pick 17, paired him up with Freddie Freeman and just giving me like a really solid base in all my offensive categories. And then with the possible exception of speed, but I got some of that later. But yeah, Bichette also hitting in that lineup, very high floor for runs and RBI. So no real concerns as a young player. I'm trying to use kind of age as a tiebreaker this year, you know, players that do might have another level to reach, and Bichette's only 24. So, well, he's 25 next week. So on Sunday, so premature birthday to Bo Bichette. Do you know, this is how old I am. I went to type him in to Fangraph search bar the other day, and I typed in Dante Bichette.
Yeah, I've done that with a few players where, you know, I come up with a different name. And I often do that with Latino players where I'm thinking of somebody else and it's like, oh, it's not the same player. It's a different name. And my brain just goes there. So, yeah, we're old, John. And then finally here with the elite players, I mean, we're not rushing through them. It's just there's not really a ton to say. I think we all are on the same page as Francisco Lindor. He's not quite here. I feel he's being appropriately drafted to kind of in a 15-team league, end of the second round, beginning of the third round. I'm fine with that. I think I haven't even ranked a little higher, like maybe a couple picks ahead of that. But Lindor, you're not getting nearly this same level of player, but you're getting somebody, again, like super solid here. Someone is going to hit home runs, he's going to steal some bases. He's not the player he was at his absolute height with the Guardians, but he's really good.
Yeah, I kind of think you're getting Bo Bichette with probably fewer steals and almost certainly a lower average. But he is, you know, he's a four category producer in the accumulating categories, and the average is certainly not something that's going to drag you down. It's more or less par if he hits in the 250s. Again, the team context is good. You know, he's going to be out there every day, so there's really no downside to Lindor.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, the health. And the thing about Lindor is, you know, he got hurt when he first started with the Mets. He had a pretty bad, like, six-week period. You look past that, and this is something I think the projection models don't necessarily account for. He's been one of the better players, not just at shortstop, but in the game. And I think that's the piece that's often missing with Lindor. Is some people are baking in that part of 2021 where, frankly, he sucked. And it was due to injury. He came back from the injury, and he looked fine. I'm not just being a Mets stan here. I just think he's really good. And, again, I'm not even really pushing for Lindor. I'm just more fine with him where he's going.
Yeah, that's a good point about the performance since the injury. But, yeah, I think we both are perfectly happy if we end up with Lindor.
Yeah, so after Lindor, there's a big clump of shortstops. We talked about Tommy Edman at second base, so we're gonna skip him. I'm gonna go from I'd say about 60 to 95. So I'm gonna rattle these off, John, and we don't have to talk about all of them, but we'll certainly talk about most of them. So there's Corey Seager 61, O'Neill Cruz 70, Dansby Swanson 81, Wander Franco 88. Xander Bogaerts 90, Tim Anderson 92, and Willy Adames 94. This is quite a group, and I think this is what we're talking about, right? Like, this is a deep group, and even if you don't like all these players, like I certainly don't, like there's somebody here that if you didn't get one of those top four or five shortstops, there's somebody here you're bound to like.
Yeah, the thing I notice is actually toward the bottom of this tier, and we can obviously talk about players higher, but That cluster with Franco, Bogaerts, and Anderson, three players who have plus batting averages. And so that's a good place to look if you've gone, you know, power heavy early and you have a deficit in batting average. And then conversely, I really like Adames. He's probably my favorite value in this tier just because I think he's just a good player. And he's got power that I don't think others in this tier maybe except for Seager and potentially Cruz. He's the one who could get you 30 home runs. So,
yeah, I think with if we're starting with the bottom, you know, which is kind of interesting. I really like Franco. The one thing about him that's kind of tricky, I'm betting on improvement. Like I'm looking at the projections are limp for him across the board. I'm expecting him to hit for more power. I think some of his issues were health last year. If he just does what the projections say, which is, you know, barely clearing double digits at home runs and steals with a great average, you're almost kind of looking at Jeff McNeil with a few more steals, at which point I don't want Franco, but that's not the bet. I think the bet here is on improvement, and I can buy it from what I've seen from him. Tim Anderson.
Wander Franco's 22nd birthday tomorrow.
Yes. So, that's a large part of what it is that, you know, Vlad for years was going much higher than this. And really the underlying numbers for Franco, yes, he was hurt last year, but the underlying numbers were better than they were for Vlad at the same age and the same point. I'm not suggesting Franco is going to do that because he's not going to hit for that kind of power. He's not that kind of player. It's going to be a broader base of skills, but he feels like a player where you bet on the talent and you're like, okay, well, if I get him at the back end of the sixth round, fine. He's going to, you know, outdo this and I'm not too worried about it. The point I was going to make about Anderson is like, so Tim Anderson, speaking of batting average, I think he's finally proven he can hit for average. Some people look at him and are like, oh, he doesn't hit 20. He's not getting 20 home runs. He's not going to steal 20 bases, yada, yada, yada. It's like, well, that might all be true. But the only reason Anderson is this low is because, in my mind, is because people are worried about injury. And I get it, but he's kind of weirdly become this safe player thanks to the average floor.
Yeah, I agree. And I wonder if the White Sox are going to run more under a new manager and a new staff, because that's always been the thing with Anderson is he has the speed. You know, he leads off, but the stolen bases are always disappointing. So, you know, pay for the projection, but he could be one that sees an uptick in speed. But everything else is great with that 300 average. You know, 300 averages you can lock in for 600 plate appearances this late in the draft is awesome.
Yeah, and you know, some of that, to your point, is a positional thing, because at some positions, you know, the steals Anderson was projected for would be a big deal. It's just that there are a lot of players at shortstop who run, and even we'll get to this later. Like, there's even some players at the bottom where all they do is speed, or most of what they do is speed. So that's part of it. But yeah, this is, and I bring up Anderson and Franco together, but this is where I kind of like the idea. They're five category contributors. Don't get obsessed with, you know, what them not necessarily being elite, and kind of bank on the average. Like the other side of this is, you know, the guy I'm concerned about just because of this is O'Neill Cruz.
Yeah, exactly.
I love O'Neill. Don't get me wrong. I love O'Neill Cruz. He's fun to watch. I had the Pirates in the annual, so I kind of found myself just idly watching highlights of his. I was writing his comments. It's just hard to believe he's real. I think at some point the talent is going to, or I should say the performance is going to catch up with the talent. But we've seen with players like this, and particularly outsized players like Cruz, it can take a while. And I don't necessarily know, you know, even if Cruz does say, you know, hit 25 home runs, steal 20 bases, I don't know if that's going to come with like a 220 average or not. And it makes you want to push him down a little bit, even acknowledging that the player is special.
Yeah. That 35% strikeout rate scares me. I expect it to go down. I don't, you know, O'Neill Cruz is fun, and I worry that my own, this is me talking to myself, that I sometimes don't take a risk on players that have so much talent that, you know, maybe at some point it is worth a bet on a leap forward. That said, I think Cruz is better positioned, maybe closer to the Franco, Bogarts, Anderson tier than where he is going you know, right there around Edmund and Swanson. A lot of people are, you know, are betting on the talent and pushing him up. And I understand that. This year, I'm probably not going to have many shares of O'Neill Cruz, but goddamn, he's a fun player to watch.
Yeah, I'd really like to have him, but some of it again goes back to there's so many choices here, right. And I'm not targeting. It's not necessarily I'm targeting anybody. It's just that I look at someone like Dansby Swanson, for example. I know Swanson seems kind of boring, but it just feels to me like, and I know he had a career year last year. I get that. But for the most part, it just feels like outside of the steals, you're going to get a lot of, you know, what you're hoping to get in Cruz that we haven't seen yet in Swanson. You know, and the strikeout rate's better. He's more established. And he's going later. You know, he's going like 11 picks later. This, you know, some of this is philosophical, right? Like we were talking about this, I think, coming into the show. I had taken Byron Buxton with a pick in TGFBI. If you have a team... Let's say Cruz, you get him right around ADP. So that's a fifth round pick in a 15 team league. If you've made four chalky, boring picks and you like your draft and you're like, you know what? I want to make the fun pick here. I want to roll the dice on somebody. Cruz is fine for that. If you've already taken the risky pick, you know, if you've taken Witt, for example, earlier, you know, maybe in the first round in particular, maybe Cruz isn't the guy you want to go for.
No. Or Tatis, for example.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think some of it probably depends on where you took Tatis.
You got good value on Tatis.
Yeah, I do too. And I'm not even saying to defend myself, but if you took Tatis in around where Witt went, I think that's kind of on the high end. I've seen him going in some of these drafts. Like, so if you got Tatis in the late first round, you know, or even a little bit higher, that's where you got to kind of watch that a little bit. We didn't talk about Corey Seager very much. I feel he's sort of boring. He's sort of reliable at this point. We know he's not going to run. I think a lot of people, I brought this up to you, John, in a chat we were having like privately on Twitter. I don't think he's going to benefit as much from the shift going away as some people think. He'll certainly benefit. But people thinking Corey Seager is going to hit 280, 290, I'm kind of like, no, I don't see happening.
With Seager, no speed, and that distinguishes him from just about everyone else in this tier. So you're really drafting a power hitter, and the average that he had with the Dodgers, it'll be interesting to see where the average lands because, yeah, I don't think the shift rule changes are going to make a huge difference, but also, you know, his he'd had BABIPs in the 300s all the way up to last year, and last year was 242. So I don't know if it was, you know, the park or getting used to new you know, a new league and a new team. I guess projections have him in the 270s. That feels like a pretty good bet. So I think he's fairly priced here. But again, it's like if you're sort of looking at your draft and thinking about speed in terms of certain positions, then, you know, Seager's big drawback is that he doesn't give you any of that, which most of the other shortstops in the top 100 will give you.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And you know, some of it, again, is that John and I are mostly agreeing. I think so much of the reason we're agreeing is I don't think any of these shortstops are in the top 90 or a little bit out of it are bad picks. Some of it really is just a matter of preference, like what you've done with your team. I don't see a single player here. I'm like, even Cruz, where I'm like, ooh, like don't take him. Hey, if you have FOMO for Cruz and you see a big year coming, hey, like take him at 70. He's not going at 30, you know, or 40. He's going at a point where I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of okay taking the risk.
Yeah, I totally agree. Maybe the next tier will be more interesting.
Yeah, maybe. Let's do, since it kind of like thin. This is where I'm talking about with thinning out. Let's look at all the 100s because there's not that many, especially if we take out Tyro Estrada. We don't need to talk about him again, John, unless you really want to get into the Giants. Nope. So we've got Jeremy Pena at 112, Ahmed Rosario at 116. Big part of my tout win last year. Thank you, Ahmed. Carlos Correa at 125, Nico Hoerner at 137, and Javi Baez at 163. So this is kind of the fall off I'm talking about. These are still some talented players, but you can certainly see the difference. Like all of them, we know they're, with maybe the possible exception of Payne, if he takes a step forward, we know they're all going to fall short in at least one category.
Yes. It's an interesting tier. Again, the player who is lacking in speed here really is Correa, more than the others. I'm curious. I have one player I want to foreground a bit, but I'm curious if you have one in this tier that stands out to you.
Not really. I think they're all sort of, probably was Correa just because, you know, we talked about coming in the show before we got on about his injury. But beyond that, no, there isn't a big standout here for me. Did you have somebody?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I don't know if this is a bargain, but it's because I in my home league, I got this player on the wire late in the season last year, and I was really surprised, and it's Nico Horner. Mm. The thing about Horner is he had zero power coming into 2022. I mean, three professional home runs in, what, like nearly 400 plate appearances. He hit 10 in 517 last year. The ISO finally went above 100. And I know you're thinking, well, that's hardly a, you know, that is damning with faint praise if there were, ever was such a thing. But he's leading off. He's a really good source of average. And I think he could be like a surprising benefit in runs. And I think he will steal close to 20 bases again. And again, like we were talking about with second base, you know, 10 home runs is not great, but it's not zero. And his projections are all around that 9, 10, 11 mark. So I guess if he falls maybe around, I would be happy to. Oh, and, you know, also he's going to get second base eligibility.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up.
Yeah, early in the season. And again, I always like getting those multi-position guys. So I think he's a little sneaky pick there in this tier.
Yeah, I mean, kind of. And you know, one reason he's sort of sneaky are those steals, because he reminds me a lot of, you know, Ahmed Rosario, who's going earlier, and, you know, quite a bit earlier. I can see a similar output for both of them. And yeah, like and yeah, Horner projects out for a little less power, so I get it. But yeah, he does seem like a bit of a bargain here, even if the home runs kind of stagnate, for sure.
I just think everyone dismissed him as just a limp noodle bat, you know, kind of grouped him with like Nick Madrigal. But I think he's not quite that. I think he is closer to Rosario in that.
Yeah, I don't really see him getting better, but he doesn't have to. Like that's kind of the point. And yeah, Rosario seems to be kind of getting paid or drafted based on what he did last year, maybe with the hopes for a little more helium. And I'm kind of like, oh, you know, he's fine. But I don't necessarily, if I'm looking at the two, you know, if Rosario, I'm going to wait after ADP, whereas Horner, I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of fine taking either one of them in the 130s, which means I'm more likely to get Horner than I am to get Rosario. You know, another pairing here that's interesting to me, and it's a much wider ADP gap, is Jeremy Pena and Javi Baez.
Mm.
So I get it. Like, Pena's had a great postseason. He's an exciting young player. Baez is a riskier player with the swing profile. He moved to a really bad park, although that's changing a little bit this year, it looks like. But given the raw players, I'd rather have Pena. Given the ADP gap, I'd much rather just sit and wait for Baez than what I feel like is reaching for Pena. Pena's the first player at shortstop who's kind of an avoid for me at his ADP, period, where it's like, I don't think I want to pay that price.
Yeah, I thought I was out on Javi Baez forever. And now at this cost, I might be back in on Javi Baez just because he will run. He's got the power. He, you know, is obviously a batting average risk, but, you know, he could hit 240, 230, 240, and it's not going to kill you. he's going to play every day for that team. And as you said, the park should play a little better. And he's one of those people. And I was listening to, you know, a few times on Rates and Barrels, you know, Saris has brought up his sort of speculation that a lot of the players who are going to benefit most from the larger bases and the pickoff rules are players who are in kind of that, you know, 8 to 12 steal range. And Baez still has speed. I mean, he is just on the wrong side of 30. But even if he steals like 15, should give you at least 20 home runs. And he's kind of a centerpiece of that lineup. So kind of talking myself into Javi Baez at this price.
Yeah, it is funny. I'm looking at the projections, and it really is the Spider-Man pointing meme when you look at Peña and Baez. Like, if a few more strikeouts for Baez, but if you stripped away everything else, it really is, they're virtually identical. So, yeah, I'd rather Baez, obviously keeper, dynasty, rather than Peña, but we're not focusing on that. And you mentioned Correa. Correa's kind of Seager light. Like he's gonna hit home runs. You know, Correa is one of those like much better players in real life. You know, if you look at his WAR, he's been the best shortstop going back to whenever, which is particularly impressive given the number of games earlier in his career that he'd miss like year in, year out. But for fantasy, because he doesn't run, because the average is never gonna be super high, he just doesn't really move the needle much. Like the ceiling for him in a great Carlos Correa year is probably up there with those shortstops like going in the mid 90s. That's probably about as high as Correa can get.
Yeah, he is. If he's healthy, he's steady. Again, yeah, with Seager, the complete lack of speed is something that is going to hurt a little bit. And I think maybe this year, not to go off on too much of a tangent with stolen bases again, and usually I'm not that, I don't care that much about steals, but I am really interested to see if it's a rising tide lifts all boats. But I feel like my draft approach is to really try to, as much as possible, avoid the players that just do not steal. And Carlos Correa hasn't had a stolen base since before the pandemic.
Yeah, I think there's something to that point. Because somebody even with one or two steals, like Seager, for example, you know, Corey Seager, if with the new rules, he's not fast, but, you know, he has run now and again. If Seager finishes this year with like seven steals, I'd be surprised, but I wouldn't be shocked. You'd be like, oh, my God, he stole seven bases. Because we know he runs now and again. Someone like Correa, someone like Brendan Rodgers, someone even at this point of his career like Mike Trout, I think you have to, maybe Trout's a bad example, but I think you have to bake that in and be like, yeah, this guy's got the red light. It's due to injury. It's due to the fact they don't want him getting hurt trying to steal a base. And yeah, that's going to detract for sure. And I'm okay again with Correa at price. I just don't really feel the need to push again, given how deep in this position is.
See, I'm not going to end up with him because he was a Giant and then he wasn't. So
yeah, well,
I did that.
I mean,
you can relate to that.
I did the same thing as a Mets fan. It's funny. I boosted him up when he came to the Mets because I thought the runs, you know, and the runs batted in would go up in that lineup. And then when he went back to Minnesota, I moved him down because I'm like, well, he's not going to get that same benefit. So, yeah. So shortstop, we're not going to go through every single player, you know, all the way down. But I want to go down like from 200 to 250 just because this is such an interesting confluence of players. Because, you know, speaking of steals, and these are the shortstops only with one exception, who's third base shortstop. C.J. Abrams at 212. Ezekiel Tovar at 224, Jorge Mateo at 232, Haesung Kim is the exception at 240, and Adalberto Mondesi at 247. These players all have the potential, with the exception of Kim, to do one thing, and that's steal a ton of bases, but also they might not do much else, and some of them, for various reasons, could disappear. Mateo in particular concerns me. I really have a feeling that by mid-year, he's not going to be a starter. He's going to be on the bench. And in an AL only, that's fine. You can still really benefit from a player on the bench like Mateo stealing a bunch of bases. Hello, Dylan Moore. But you really, in a mixed league, you really need at-bats or plate appearances. And I that's my worry with Mateo.
Yeah, he's not really a key part of the Orioles' future. So,
yeah.
And he doesn't, you know, steals aside, he doesn't give you that much real baseball value. So,
well, I was gonna say he's a bad on base guy. This is kind of where the real life comes in for me. And you know, I know we're talking about Baez and Pena before. When you're down like in the 270s, like and maybe 280 or lower, that's the red flag for me. It's like, yeah, I don't want to draft somebody, especially inside the top 300, who's that bad at getting on base. Like you're just running the risk that you're just not going to have a job. Like at that point, if I'm making a steals play, I'm just going to take Miles Straw super late and hope that he bounces back. And if he doesn't, I'm taking him at what, 350. I'll just wave bye in a couple of weeks.
So that answers my Adalberto Mondesi question.
Oh, would I take him? I mean, the difference with Mondesi and Mateo is if you take Mondesi at this stage, you're really rolling the dice, right? Like you're hoping that it's the 1 year where he gets like 300, 350 plate appearances and goes nuts. And you're like, great, he goes nuts for those plate appearances. I have him at the beginning of it or for most of it. And if he's out for the season, I won because I replace him with somebody else. He's not my type of player, though, and I can't see having him. So, yeah, it's really unlikely. And to that point, John, there was a point where Mondesi looked like he might be acceptable. I don't want to say good as a real-life baseball player. He just looks bad now, and he's looked bad for a couple seasons outside of the steals when he has been on the field.
Yeah, it looks like there's I'm looking at roster resource, and okay, they've got him on the injured list because of the knee surgery. Yeah, I then that's the whole thing too with Mondesi is the on base is bad, the injuries are frequent. So that was really not all that serious. The player I like here, I think two players I like here are Ha-Seong Kim and Luis Urias, and Kim especially. Because everyday play in a strong lineup. And I think he's just getting better. He had a bad year in 2021, his first year over here. He had significant improvement last year. He's, you know, good enough defensively. I mean, he probably should be the shortstop, but, you know, because of the Xander signing, he won't be. But he'll have third, short, and second. Yes, third and short already. And that's an optimal multi-position configuration.
Yeah.
And, you know, Urias is everyday player, not spectacular, fills the stat sheet, except for speed, also in a good park and a decent lineup. I just don't see myself chasing speed here, which is what you're doing with the Abrams and the Mateo and the Mondesis.
Well, and, you know, Abrams, I pointed out, like some have pointed to his September and said, oh, you know, he bounced back. He hit for a high average. It really is one of the emptiest averages that you ever saw. And I think he had one walk, if I remember correctly. I put this in my ADP piece. I'm kind of looking for it now. Yeah. I'm sorry. It was a 1% walk rate. That's what it was.
Yeah.
I mean, he just was he was doing the thing where he was just swinging at everything. And it was the end of the season for teams that were out of it. I think they're like, yeah, whatever. I mean, we all want to go home. And then Tovar, I have nothing against Tovar, but, you know, as much as people say or like to say Met's going to Met, I think the saying should be Rocky's going to Rocky. did you see that piece, by the way, where the Rockies are talking about sitting some of their best hitters at home?
I thought I was in crazy land. Like, what the... That makes no sense to me.
Yeah, I have to imagine they're not going to go through with that. Like, it's just something they're talking about. But, yeah, it's like, I understand the theory, which is, you know, the players in their first series away from cores or hitters, you know, it's an adjustment. They you know, it's the thin air versus, you know, the regular altitude. But, yeah, why would you waste a series or a game with those players? It doesn't really make sense. There has to be, I guess, a load management way to handle that. Like, I know certainly with Olympic athletes there is, but it can't be just saying we're going to sit the best players for home games and home series. What I'm hoping is maybe there was something more to that and it was just garbled.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't come through quite right, or, you know, and I'm not even blaming the reporter. Maybe like it was the, you know, whoever's, I think it was the manager.
It was Bud Black. Yeah.
It was maybe Bud Black garbling the concept.
Very possible.
I hope, because it doesn't make a lot of sense. But yeah, as far as Tovar goes, I believe in the defense. I just don't really know if the offense for him, even in cores, I don't know if it's going to be there.
Yeah, I'm not. No longer is it the case that I will speculate on players just because they're Rockies and they play half their games in Coors Field. I think that ship has sailed. I mean, I think the organization has been, and again, this is not a commentary on Tovar, who is probably a perfectly fine prospect. I'm just kind of going to kind of go in Rockies hibernation until Zach Veen gets here, maybe. And, you know, sure, there could be some useful Rockies. We've talked about a few of them, yep. But this is not where I'm going.
Yeah, let's veer down to the bottom of the position. And, you know, speaking of thin, it falls off fast, but like there's a few interesting names. I really like Oswald Peraza. I feel like he's getting overlooked. The assumption is, you know, another interesting name is Anthony Volpe is going to replace him. But even if Volpe's up sooner rather than later, I think the Yankees find a place for Peraza to play. He's a good-looking player. It didn't really show up in the stat sheet last year, but I got to see him in the minors, you know, here in, you know, in New Jersey, like across the bridge. Just like what I saw. And then, you know, it's really funny. Elvis Andrus signed with the White Sox or re-signed with the White Sox. I imagine his price is going up a little bit since this ADP is from the last month or so, but he really just found another level. And I'm not suggesting he'll do that again, but he's just that prototypical boring third middle infielder where a little power, some speed. I'm perfectly okay with just filling in with him at the end as an MI or even as a bench piece, being like, yeah, you know what? This is someone I'm able to kind of just stick in there if I need to do it.
See, I'm already mad at myself for how many Elvis Andrus shares I'm going to have this year. Like,
yeah,
I see him here and I think it's obviously, yes, his price will go up, but every day, you know, playing at, on a team that, you know, is not bad offensively. They have plenty of other problems, Mike Clevenger, but, they're a decent offense if they can stay healthy. And, you know, Andrus, you know, he's not dead yet. So
nope, not at all. I snagged him for two in an AL only a couple days before he signed, and I'm still pretty happy about that.
Yeah, this is where we are in life and in the podcast, being happy about Elvis Andrus.
Thanks once again for listening to episode 286 of Flags Fly Forever, a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Baseball podcast. This is normally where I put the plugs in, but like I said, I want to spare you the noise in the background. For our regular listeners, I once again do apologize. These fans will be gone tomorrow, but you, the fans of Flags Fly Forever, will be here week in and week out. We'll be back next week talking about outfielders. Once again, for Mike Gianella, John Hagelin, Samuel Hale, and the fans from ServiceMaster, we'll be back next week.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, y'all.